Bad news, the Delta variant is sweeping the south of the United States, taking over some hospitals, but is there an end to this? I think we can see it, and I'm going to show you that hypothesis. Come on, let's go take a look.
The following is the audio version of a video released at peakprosperity.com. Visit peakprosperity.com to watch the video and to find other insightful content such as articles, discussion forums, and exclusive subscriber-only content.
Hello, everyone. Dr. Chris Martinson here. It's August 10th, 2021. And thank you so much for all of you that have been paying attention to this channel, listening. We've been going through the data. You know my position. When the data changes, so will I. And I've come across some data lately that shook me up a little and is causing me to reorient a tiny bit around how I'm thinking about things. And as well, I know that emotions are high. We see it all the time. I'm seeing it at my own website. We're seeing it out in Twitter. We're seeing it perhaps in your own friendscape out there. People are really on edge. I think the rats in a cage metaphor is really apt at this point in time. We've been given bad advice every step of the way. There's no reason to trust authorities who are saying, trust us this time. And that's a very difficult environment to operate within. And against that backdrop, we have this new Delta variant, which if you've been watching my channel, you know, is not an ordinary variant. This variant has a mutation in an all-critical furin cleavage site, which is that little hinge between the S1, S2 proteins on the spike of the coronavirus, which gives it easier entry into the cells, which means it can replicate more rapidly, which means people develop higher loads, all of which leads to worse outcomes for some people. All right, here's what I got a call this weekend, and I talked with Pierre Corey, and then I wasn't sure what I was going to do with that call, and then he tweeted it out, and here's the tweet. Let me get my drawing tool out here so that I know what I'm up to. Seems to have disappeared for the moment. I'll have to go into here. There it is. All right. I listen really most carefully to the frontline doctors in this, including those at the Frontline COVID Critical Care, or FLCCC, and Pierre Corey. I talked with him this Sunday. Here he is writing on August 9th. That would be yesterday. He writes, I have experienced and am getting reports from FLCCC Alliance members that Delta variant patients crashing into ICUs. They are not showing responses to Math Plus, which is their protocol for treatment. We are demoralized and frightened. Early treatment is critical. Every household should take iMask Plus upon first symptoms. Totally agree, and I highly support this. And of course, you should consult your own doctor. This is what the frontline COVID critical care doctors recommend, and you can find that at flccc.net. The Math Plus protocol has been a really solid protocol. They've had extraordinarily good success with it. Now, to be fair, most of these FLCCC docs are at the back end of this whole thing. They're in the ICUs. By the time patients have come to them, they've already crashed out in some other scenario. Many of them still to this day are not getting early treatments. They're being sent home and being told, come back if your lips turn blue or you get into a real crisis. By then, as we know, because the virus has a replication phase and then it has a downstream phase where your own body starts attacking itself, early treatment is absolutely critical in this story. All right, so these are the things that are on the Math Plus protocol. I won't read them all out to you, but the MATH stands for things like methylprednisolone, ascorbic acid, thiamine, and heparin, and things like that. But there are other things on here. Duizabin 2 is on here. Ivermectin. I don't know if I can say that anymore, but maybe I can. Fluvoxamine, and so on. Vitamin D, et cetera, zinc, all sorts. There's lots of things on. What they're finding is they're throwing this, we'll call that the kitchen sink. They're throwing this kitchen sink at some patients, some, not all, some who are not responding. And that's got them very worried. So what are they calling for? This is the FLCCC again saying our critical care team is advising extreme vigilance, which I'm going to reinforce. I believe that that's absolutely warranted in this case. Against the Delta variant, early treatment strongly recommended to prevent hospitalization. Read the notice below. I'll let you read that down there. I'll pause here and sort of dwell for a minute because I think this is absolutely critical. We've got some extraordinarily strong data around. And by the way, around that stuff down there in yellow in the red section. Again, it's very hard to know what I can talk about anymore. But we have strong data coming from a lot of countries. But I have to point out that as a toxicologist, this is among the most safe compounds I have ever studied. its safety margin is a mile wide, meaning if this is the dose that people are getting and this is where we start seeing toxicity, there's a huge gap. You could take lots more than the recommended dose and still not get close to even what we call moderate toxicity profiles. That's the nature of it. Of course, every drug has its own safety profile, not recommended for everybody, all of that. But in terms of generally comparing this treatment compared to others, it's pretty astonishing what its safety profile is. We have all the data on that. There's lots of toxicity reports. And of course, we have 40 plus years of experience across the world with over 4 billion doses. So it's very, very safe. And the question is, when you have something that's that safe, why not? We see aspirin being given prophylactically or as an early treatment to patients when they come into the hospital. Why? Because of its anti-clotting. And also, you know, it helped people feel a little bit better. But that's why something that's really, really safe like aspirin is given in a setting, because what harm could it do? So that they're recommending very aggressive early treatment. And of course, that's the nature with any antiviral. You want to get it in as early as possible. Plus, of course, we're going to recommend having your terrain, that is the state of your body, in the best possible tuned up shape it can be. So that means vitamin D, zinc, selenium, quercetin, walking, exercise, light or moderate exercise, not like, you know, triathlete stuff that actually makes things worse. 30 minutes a day is what is being recommended as sort of like a nice amount that really provides good benefits for people. Sunshine, fresh air, good sleep, and low stress. For me, that means no CNN, because they're just pushing, you know, basically, I think CNN's message is you're all going to die. And I don't agree with that message at all. But I don't agree with it mostly because it creates stress as well as it's wrong. But that stress is actually harming people's health and the general status of their immune system, and as well melatonin. Many of these are actually on that Math Plus protocol up here. So go to flccc.net, tabs at the top, look at protocols. They've got a variety of them. Math Plus is just one. There's another one out there, iRecover, for long-haul COVID and for people who think they may have had vaccine issues, which there are a few people like that. So this is the news right now. It's about Delta variant. This is mostly a Delta variant story. We see Arkansas hospitals are running out of ICU beds. They can number them. They're down to like 8 open beds at the time of this writing. COVID-19 surge, overwhelming hospitals. Remember, the whole point of this is not to overwhelm your hospitals, because then people get bad treatment, assuming they're going to get the standard of care that the FLCC docs are even offering. So this is just, and by the way, this is a screenshot. I just took this morning and I ran it only for the past 24 hours. So this is dominating the headlines. Children's hospitals in North Texas, 97% capacity, possibly misleading. We don't know what proportion of that is due to RSV and COVID and things like that, but certainly filling up. This is exactly something that Geert Vandenbosch told us about in that really explosive interview I did with him a while ago, where he talked about the inappropriateness of putting a leaky vaccine into a population that one of the things you would anticipate among many is that variants would emerge that would begin to hit younger and younger people. That was a prediction he made. We're starting to see it now. I don't know if those are connected. We would want to have more studies, and we can't say for sure that's the case, but I will say, if you look back at that episode I did with Geert Vandenbosch, a lot of what he talked about is now unfolding before our eyes. So make of that what you will. I think it needs a lot more study, and I wish we would look into it. So I have a hypothesis, though, which is kind of bad news, good news. So here's the hypothesis about the Delta variant, and it's got four parts to it. Here's part one of this hypothesis. First, Delta is a supercharged virus, and that's because, and it gets into cells really super easily, and this is due to an unfortunate mutation. There was one more mutation. You know, these variants all have mutations. It had a mutation in the furin cleavage site that turned the P in the PRRA into another R. That RRRA looks to provide really good, what's called fusogenic. It allows this virus to fuse with the membrane really quickly and easily. And remember, this PRRA is this really mysterious little section that we don't see in any of the putative closest relatives of SARS-2. Just magic little cassette that got inserted in there and that fits in to its overall genomic sequence. And of course, this is sort of a standard gain of function insert that has been done over and over again in lots of other gain-of-function research experiments with influenza, apparently, possibly, as well with corona. Again, I think this ought to be investigated and should be investigated really, really thoroughly, because, well, I would rather we didn't have to go through this all again. If this was just humans being stupid and full of hubris and thinking that, you know, they could fool around with things, and then this was the result, let's find those people and make sure they're not in power and we don't do this anymore, because that would be smart, okay? Could we just not do this again? So that's part one. What's part two of this hypothesis? Let's go here. Part two is that faster fusion of the virus particle with the cell leads to faster replication because it just gets inside cells so much faster. And that leads to these higher viral loads. This is an article from the 21st of July. It's in Nature. And it's the title here is How the Delta Variant Achieves Its Ultra-Fast Spread. Article goes on to note that viral load is roughly 1,000 times higher in people infected with the Delta variant than those infected with the original coronavirus strain. Now, this is according to a study in China. It's kind of a small study, not that many, I think like N of 36, but enough to say, oh my gosh, these are like not just, if they were slightly higher, you'd have to do a big, big number test to find a difference. These are massively higher loads in the Delta variant. So that's kind of the bad news in that story. So let me see. Yeah, they put a little bit of, I just pulled a little of the data from that. In a preprint posted 12th of July, the researchers report the virus was first detectable in people with the Delta variant 4 days after exposure, compared with an average of 6 days among people with the original strain, suggesting Delta replicates much faster. So that's a big difference. Somebody gets exposed to the virus, within 4 days you can detect the Delta variant, but it's not until 1-2 more days that you can detect that in classic SARS. So that doesn't sound like a lot, 4 days, 6 days, it's actually huge. It means that the Delta variant is achieved in 4 days what the old virus took 6 days. That's 2 days your body did not have to begin mounting its defenses. Because as we now know, through this program and others you might have been watching, it takes time. It takes time for your body to detect an invader and then to mount a response to that. So what's the difference between 4 days and 6 days? Night and day. It's a really, really big difference. As well, they noted individuals infected with Delta also had viral loads up to 1,260 times higher than those in people infected with the original strain. So this isn't just like they have twice the viral load. Every increment of additional viral load that's in your body means there's a worse possibility for a worse outcome. We know that that starting load, the starting dose, the starting inoculum is a really critical number. Well, if these people with Delta are having up to 1,260 times the viral load, that begins to explain, I think, some of what Pierre Corey is seeing and what other doctors are seeing is that some people are getting overwhelmed. So I'm going to explain this all the way. We're not quite done with it. So we go to part three of this hypothesis. Part one is Delta virus supercharged because of that mutation. That leads to faster fusion, and then it spreads as easily as chickenpox. Well, that means it spreads like wildfire. We see here again, just in the past 24 hours from this search, I just performed that search this morning, constrained it to the past 24 hours, and articles pop right up saying Delta variant is contagious as chickenpox, CDC internal documents say, and we've covered this before. Contagious as chickenpox. Delta is causing a surge in new cases in Indiana. Here's why. Interesting articles. They don't really get to what I talked about, which is that it's because there's this PRRA, now RRRA, furin cleavage site. That's the mutation that was really bad. Again, really bad luck for us all that somehow this coronavirus got that exact little furin cleavage site cassette inserted into its genome. Somehow, some say from nature, could have happened. I say most likely came from a lab. So that's what we're dealing with now. And I say most likely. I can't be sure of anything, but that's where the data fits right now. So spreading like chickenpox, sure enough, unfortunately, this is coming to us from the Sydney Morning Herald. COVID-19 is more contagious, and our vaccines, as amazing as they are, do not offer 100% protection against spreading the virus. Delta is about 60% more infectious than the Alpha variant, which was in turn perhaps 50% more contagious than the original. These are big numbers. We're increasing. Down in yellow at the bottom, former Victorian Deputy Chief Health Officer Alan Chang estimates Delta's R-naught is around 5. America Centers for Disease Control and Prevention puts it between 5 and 9. R-naught between 5 and 9. That's approaching chickenpox. What is this crazy R-naught stuff? You probably, listen, I talked about this extensively over a year ago. So let's revisit it real quick. I made a handy little table. We got a column of numbers here, and we got some rows. And so what we're tracking here is infection hops or cycles. So let's start with an R-naught of 1. That means on average, I get a disease, I have a chance of passing it to one other person. So if I had it, I'm 1, I pass it to one other person, now 2 people have had it. That other person spreads it to 1 more person, so now 3 people have had it. And they spread it to 1 on average, so now 4 people have had it. So after 7 hops or cycles, 8 total people have had it. Me, the original patient 0, and then the other 7 people that it got hopped to. So that's 8. Excuse me. What if the R-naught is 2? Well, then I give it to 2 people, and they give it to 2 people. And so we go from 4 to 8 to 16 to 32. And after just 7 hops, it's the difference between 8 people getting it. Excuse me. And 256. No, I don't have COVID. Just did a little thing from talking so much. I hope I don't have COVID. I don't. All right. What if the R-naught's 5? Well, 5 becomes 25, becomes 125, becomes 625, and jumps up after just those 7 hops. 390,625 people have had it. What if the R-naught's 9? Well, then by the end of those 7 hops, 43 million people have been infected. So that's the difference between an R-naught of 1 and 9. That's why when they say, oh, it could be like chickenpox with an R-naught of between 5 and 9, hair on fire moment. That means it's spreading really, really fast, really easily. And again, why? Well, because it jumps into somebody's body, replicates super fast, has very high viral loads. And when you have very high viral loads, you're shedding very high levels of virus out into the atmosphere or into the environment, which other people can then encounter. So, I'm going to predict here, the hypothesis part 4 of this is that Delta is actually causing massively more infections that are actually being detected right now. 5 times as many, 20 times, 100? I don't know. I can just guarantee you that with something that spreads this rapidly without an actual, honest to goodness, random testing of people out in the population for both PCR for active infection and serologically for antibodies for prior infection, if you're not random sampling and testing, you won't know how many people are being infected. So who is being tested? Well, very typically, people who show up as either symptomatic or having been in contact with somebody who's symptomatic or who have to be tested for either travel or work. That's a tiny sample set relative to the large population. So I can guarantee this, as many as infections as are being reported, there's many, many more times that out there in the actual environment. All right, so when we look at it that way, let's see where we go here. Oh, how about Lollapalooza 2021? This is a picture of Lollapalooza. Now I want you to think chickenpox with an R-naught of 5 to 9. Like this is just like chickenpox central right here. Very poor mask wearing of people who are wearing masks. They were wearing them like magic talismans, meaning they're just sort of loose fitting and sort of under the nose. They're not doing anything. So they're more of like they're masks with 2 air quotes, not an honest, well-fitted N95. All right, and so just in case you know you want to think about that, just think about these rows down here. With a, somewhere between here and here, this virus is now spreading out through and around and within this population. And this is not to pick on Lollapalooza. We could pick on any a variety of other gatherings. But look, I get it. People are tired. This has been going on long enough. It's summer. SARS isn't supposed to even be spreading in the summer. Coronaviruses are fall and spring kinds of things. Why is it spreading now? Because this Delta variant spreads like chickenpox. It's supercharged. It's got a mutation in a really unfortunate spot that somehow, unfortunately, got into this particular coronavirus. And that's the PRRA furin cleavage site is now RRRA. That supercharges it, allows it to get in. Now, why is this really critical? Because 5, the vaccinated, and plus this general loss of caution that people have, the vaccinated, am I picking on the vaccinated? A little bit, because I think this is leading and causing massive viral loading in the unwary. And here's why. Down here, Bill de Blasio, mayor of New York City, said the key to the New York City pass, key, you get a key to the city. That's very nice. This is just from August 4th. He said, the key to New York City, when you hear those words, I want you to imagine the notion that because someone is vaccinated, they can do all the amazing things available in New York City. This is a miraculous place, literally full of wonders. If you are vaccinated, all that is going to open up to you. You have the key. You can open the door. If you're unvaccinated, unfortunately, you will not be able to participate in many things. That's the point we're trying to get across. Unfortunately, the point that also gets across is that if you're vaccinated, you're okay. So here's what I think is happening. I think people who are vaccinated now feel, oh, I've been vaccinated. I am immune from this thing. That's not true. We know that the vaccinated have viral loads that are every bit as high as unvaccinated. We know that they can transmit it. We also know that the vaccinated tend to get sick a lot less. And that's a very good thing. The bad side of that, every coin has two sides, is that those vaccinated people with high viral loads without symptoms don't know that they're potentially carriers. I mean, if you or I, vaccinated or unvaccinated, if we suddenly had dripping nose, splitting headache, and we were coughing, we would know not to get in a car with Uncle Bob and take a 6-hour, you know, closed air ride with the AC on with you know, no exterior air coming in. We would know not to do that because we might infect Uncle Bob or something like that. So I think it's unfortunate that Bill de Blasio, among many others, are saying that if you're vaccinated, yeah, you can just like throw caution to the wind. You are now, you get a key to the city. You're now completely safe. Not like those unvaccinated people. When the point is, we actually, while we have this Delta variant running around, which tramples and tromps across both the vaccinated and unvaccinated alike, we have to treat every single human, whether vaccinated or not, as somebody who's potentially somebody we just need to keep our caution around, right? So again, don't be getting into long car rides with people if you have any one of several conditions out there that would say you wouldn't be a good candidate to get COVID. As well, nobody does well with a high viral starting load. I don't care if you're vaccinated, super fit, your terrain's well prepared, there is a magic number of virus that you can get into you that will completely overwhelm all of that and take you down. That's just how it works. So the viral load is really important. Remember, I first covered this back in March 15th, 2020. There was this wonderful doctor, Rishi Desai. He talked about how if you start with a low inoculum, you have a better outcome. If you have a high inoculum, you have a worse outcome. This is part of the context for wearing masks. And so again, when I say wearing masks, do I think people should wear masks? Sure. But not this mask. I don't think that one. Probably not that one. Not that. Don't do that. That's not the mask I'm talking about. Let's see. Can I find any examples? Oops. Olivia, why does it do that to me? All right.
I don't know, but I still have you framed.
All right.
So we're still good.
Not that mask. Not that one either. Nope. Let's not do that. Yeah. What are we talking about? I think that if you are in a situation where you are going to be in high contact, so for myself, I'm going to be traveling in a little while. If I'm going to get on an airplane, there's guaranteed statistically there's Delta on that plane, right? Because this thing's spreading like chicken pox. I don't want that high viral load. I'm going to be wearing a well-fitted N95 mask. When I say I support people wearing masks, it's in situations where you're in high contact and you're wearing an actual fitted mask. Not any of these types of masks here, nothing loose, not a bandana, not a t-shirt pulled up over your nose, not these floppy things that have cool things printed on them, but an honest-to-God, well-fitted N95 mask, which has tight edges, the chin is all nice and snug, the straps are in place, you're clean-shaven, so you don't have big, like, air infiltrations around your scratchy beard, and most importantly, the nose clip is all nice and snugged in. So that's what I'm talking about. These things out here, and people say, are you mask, anti-mask? It's, again, there's nuance and complexity to every single thing we're going to talk about. These aren't masks, people. These are magic talismans that people wear, like, you know, when you put the little chin strap on, it ain't doing anything. I say you might as well not wear a mask. If that's your version of wearing a mask, and even if this one here was well-fitted, still not, doesn't count. So you want to make sure that if you're going to be out there and you're worried about, you know, getting exposed to Delta, make sure you have a proper fitting mask on that whole thing. All right. Okay. So here's my Delta hypothesis. I've condensed it down. First, it's highly transmissive. It develops these huge viral loads within patients and infected individuals. People have also now dropped their guard because we're tired of this whole thing. And I totally get a lot of sympathy there. And the vaccines are providing a false sense of security that's no longer warranted. That's what the data says. The data said that by the time Bill de Blasio was said that, the data said that by the time Fauci came out and said the vaccines aren't working as well as we thought, so that's why everybody has to be vaccinated, which is a really strange piece of logic. We already know that. So the vaccines could be providing that false sense of security. Therefore, because we've dropped our guard and some people think they're safe when they're not, some people are getting walloped by massive starting inoculums. That is, they get a huge initial dose of SARS-2, and that rapidly overwhelms their defenses. So if a normal person gets like a tiny viral load, but in 4 days you can detect Delta, what happens if somebody gets a massive load of Delta and you could detect it in a day, right? This thing, again, how fast, if it's replicating 1,000 times faster, which is a possibility, that means it's just overwhelming the systems of your body very, very quickly. All right, the law of large numbers says that even if Delta is less harmful on an infection fatality rate basis, and that data I think is still good, I think that's true, it's incomplete. So I'm going to put an asterisk on that, but I think that's the case. But even if that were the case, that Delta has a lower infection fatality rate than the earlier ones, then it's still going to overwhelm hospitals due to sheer volume. Because again, you know, what's happening with this whole thing is, well, let's see, let's go back up here. Thank you for giving me my controls back. I always appreciate that. This is the law of large numbers. You take something with a massive, massive ability to infect, and, you know, it might be that if Delta sweeps across this crowd and Delta has a very low infection fatality rate, the law of large numbers says, yeah, but if you hit 100,000 people, 5 or 10 of them are going to have a bad run of it. And they're going to end up in the ICU and they're going to crash out because they just got overwhelmed, because some of them are just going to have had the bad luck to have breathed in deeply. They're all excited at the same time somebody else breathed out strongly or was singing, and they just managed to catch that massive viral load. It happens. Okay. So that's what we have to watch out for there. And I really think that people need to still keep their caution. So what does that mean? Well, however, there might be some good news. Here's the thing. When you have something that transmits as easily as the Delta variant, the effectiveness of that works both for and against you. Works against you at the initial part, maybe even risks overrunning your hospitals, but it means that we'll much more rapidly get to herd immunity. So it's not a forever deal. The UK, this is classic, the original version of SARS-2 that came through. This is their most recent wave. And it's already coming down and coming down pretty hard. The hypothesis here is that Delta is already swept through that population. And by the way, with an R-naught of 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 or 9, it's going to sweep through very, very, very rapidly. And we might be seeing that as well in the Indian data. India, of course, is where the Delta variant first arose, we think. And they've already gone through a big, giant wave. And now it seems to be waning. And so that's the idea there, that maybe this stuff comes and goes. This is my prediction. I think this is what we're going to see in the United States again, a very scary upslope, and then poof, it's going to just start to disappear. But if we were tracking, and we're not tracking appropriately, but if we were, we'd be able to see that in fact, what happens is what has happened with every single virus before, which is that eventually enough people have been exposed that it creates herd immunity. And that herd immunity can be a factor of two things. People with vaccines can be sometimes a firebreak. In this case, we're learning not as much, but still there must be some sort of an impediment. It's good that the vaccinated are not going to the hospitals or dying nearly as much as people who are unvaccinated. That's a great thing. And we're going to have people who develop natural immunity. And by the way, they're probably going to be the lion's share of the numbers out there, because we still, the best data we have says that natural immunity is the best form of immunity because it's more comprehensive and it lasts longer. So those are that's the good part of the story. Now, I said, so far, the data is still telling me that Delta is not that deadly. It's hard to interpret this data because, of course, more people are vaccinated. So you would expect fewer people to die. That brings the numbers down. But still, even with these big spikes in cases, the overall death counts that we are seeing, so this is actually only good through 7/31. So today is the 10th of August. We're missing 10 critical days. we could see this number bump back up again. But this top line is all age groups that have died, and every other one of these is different age groups, with the youngest on the bottom, the oldest up at the top. So we don't see the bumps there yet in that data, but as well. This was kind of interesting to me. I thought urban people would have been more at risk than, say, non-urban. I called them rural, but they really say they're non-urban. And so metropolitan and non-metropolitan. There's really no difference here in the overall on a per, this is deaths per 100,000 basis. There's really no difference between rural versus urban, almost identical lines. That wasn't true early on. Urban places got walloped. This is when a lot of people moved to the country. I don't know why it's not different now. Probably just maybe the virus finally moved to the city, out of the city, into the country. I have another prediction that we're also going to see less or fewer than usual deaths for the rest of 2021, probably into 2022. Why? Because a lot of these people, as we know from the CDC data, who died here were actually very sick. They had six or more comorbidities. They tended to be older. They were going to die probably within the next few years anyway. COVID hastened that and brought those deaths forward. We see them here in this big peak right here, which means we're going to start seeing fewer deaths. We're going to be falling under this expected death line here going forward. It's a prediction I'm making. I'm going to wait for the data, so I'm not putting too much on that. I just thought you might be interested in thinking about it that way. And as well, it's now becoming something we talked about quite a while ago now. Now we're starting to see this, the rest of the world catching up a little bit. This here is a UK official out of the Oxford Center saying,
we are in a situation here with this current variant where herd immunity is not a possibility because it still infects vaccinated individuals.
Get that? Herd immunity is not a possibility with this vaccine because this variant still infects vaccinated individuals. Boom. Mic drop moment. This is, of course, a very highly placed official in the UK structure.
And I suspect that what the virus will throw out next is a variant which is perhaps even better at transmitting in vaccinated populations.
Boom. Second mic drop. He's saying, again, of course, something that we reported here with Geert Vandenbosch a number of weeks ago. It's a fairly simple virology concept, and it's now coming due. And I think people, you know, I think I'm going to have to bring that particular interview with Geert back out because it was so prescient. He predicted so many of the things that we are now seeing, and he was predicting these a long time ago. So I think it's time to bring that back out because understanding where we're going to go, I think, helps us get to the point of saying, listen, this virus is here. We're not going to eliminate it through any possible combination of official or policy acts. Instead, we're going to have to learn to live with it. If we're going to learn to live with it, maybe we ought to know what we should be expecting. And so this gentleman here is telling us that maybe we should expect new variants that are actually even better at evading the vaccines, which, of course, makes sense.
And so that's an even more of a reason not to be making a vaccine program around herd immunity. I don't think there's anything the UK can do to stop the emergence of new variants. They're going to happen. And if anything, we need to focus now not on what might stop new variants, because I don't think we have any facility to control that. We need to focus on thinking about how do we prevent people dying or going to hospital.
Bingo. I totally agree with every word that was just said there. It's, of course, logical. And logic brings you to this conclusion very easily. It has nothing to do with emotion. It's not about what we want or what we're hoping or what somebody told us that we thought we were hopeful about the vaccines. It's just literally reality about a non-sterilizing vaccine against this particular honey badger virus and how good it is at escaping things. So I agree with this. And by the way, that brings us back to the original thing I started with, which is Pierre Corey saying the way we prevent people from going to the hospital and dying from this thing, of course, is with early treatment as a cornerstone of that whole practice. Having better vaccines out there is going to be another cornerstone of this. When those come along, I think, you know, we owe it to ourselves to have a very open mind about the new vaccines that are out there in development, and let's evaluate them when they come out and come to market, because I think there's going to be a lot of different strategies out there, and they're all of them, like all vaccines, there's nuances. Some will work better, Some will work better in some circumstances. Some will work better than others in all circumstances. Some will have different side effect profiles. They're complicated. It's not just like this magic bullet you give and everybody responds the same. It's a thing that has to be fairly nuanced, and some of them are going to be better than others. So I agree with him. And as well, Iceland's chief epidemiologist said, the country's chief epidemiologist, Borofur Gundason, made headlines for his statements in a radio interview yesterday morning that herd immunity would be reached by letting the virus spread through society while preventing the hospital from collapse. It's an identical sort of a sentiment. He backpedaled a little. Later that day, he told reporters his words were misinterpreted, and authorities' policy toward the ongoing pandemic remained unchanged. But they actually not really misinterpreted. He was speaking the truth here again, which is true, which is that this vaccine is incapable of developing, these vaccines that we're using right now are incapable of developing or creating a condition of herd immunity all on their own. Why? Because this Delta variant still spreads, whether you're vaccinated or not. So we're starting to see this sort of reality start to creep in to the official thinking in a variety of places, variety of countries. Not mine, not here in the U.S. yet, not Australia, not Canada, not France, but maybe we'll get there eventually. And by the way, Iceland is an interesting case because they're so highly vaccinated, a little bit like Israel. Here we can see their daily new cases across time, very, very low. This is that this, there's no extra digits missing. That's 100. This is 150, right? And here I've lined up daily new deaths, and you can see the relationship between the peak of daily new cases and daily new deaths. Look at this. That's a one, people. So they're still averaging. Their seven-day average right now is zero in Iceland. So what, maybe a little over 300,000 people live there. But here again, you can see that there's a relationship. There's a peak here of new cases, and then the deaths sort of follow afterwards. There was a little spike here, and then that. So this spike right now has not led to any deaths that we can see so far. And as well, when we look at their overall statistics, we find that over time, throughout all of this, they've had a 0.4% rate of death across all closed cases. They still have active cases with about a 2% serious or critical. And so I think we can certainly say that the vaccines are doing a very good job here of preventing things from getting more critical. And certainly we'll notice here that of those who are infected, there's very few who are not vaccinated now in Iceland. And so they are still representing, even though fully vaccinated, is a larger number of people who are in number terms being infected than unvaccinated. You have to remember there's way more of these people than there are these people. So when we normalize that, you still have a better chance of getting infected if you are unvaccinated. So that's the way it stands right now in that data. But the idea of getting to herd immunity through these vaccines is a non-starter. The other troubling feature about this is everything Geert was talking about, which is that because of how we're going about using these leaky vaccines, we are raising the chance of creating the conditions for a new variant to emerge. Why? Because they have a chance to escape from every one of these bodies that has vaccines that are leaky, and the virus comes in and gets to practice within that environment to figure out if it can figure out how to evade that immune response. So I want you to remain alert. This isn't time to drop your guard. Maybe take your supplements, get good sleep, be not stressed, go outside, exercise, all of that stuff. If you're in crowds, though, consider wearing a proper mask, not a magic talisman mask, right? And if you get symptoms, you got to get early treatment. There are treatments out there. There are plenty of doctors now who will treat appropriately. Go to flccc.net and take a look. They've got big lists of doctors there. They've got a whole alliance. And then beyond all this, though, where's the light at the end of this tunnel? It's my prediction is the Delta variant is going to cause a much more rapid herd immunity response, and we're going to reach it faster than most expect. If we follow the Indian data at this point, we got about another 2 months in the United States before that variant is swept through. The only thing that's going to, that my only asterisk on this is, we have to just pray that we don't get another variant that pops out, either in a vaccinated or an unvaccinated person. But if it pops out in a vaccinated person, probably worse because it's already learned the immune escape techniques in order to figure out how to pop out around those existing vaccines. So if that happens, then we have to go back and look at the Geert Vandenbosch hypothesis one more time, because he predicts some things that are not good if that eventuality happens. So let's hope that doesn't happen. Let's hope we get to the herd immunity really quick. Tell you what, thank you very much for listening to this. If you could, if you found this useful, share it with five other people. Remember, it doesn't have to be this way. So that's all I have for you today. Over at my website at Peak Prosperity, I've got a lot more data around this. I'm going to talk more specifically about my particular responses to all of this data, plus some other things that we need to discuss about the likely implications of all of this. So that's all I have for you out here at YouTube today. Remember, if you want to come by Peak Prosperity, there's a link down below. Click that, take you over. We have a special offer for you if you want to come and see what we can talk about over there, which we obviously have more freedom in our own private space to say more things. So that's it. Talk to you next time. Thanks for listening.